Hi, everyone, and welcome to Oscar Wilde, a podcast about film, always counting down to next year's Oscars. I'm Sophia Simonello.
And I'm Nick Rekraut.
And today we have an award season release roundup. We'll be going through a few recent releases that are out in theaters now or on Netflix. So we'll be talking about Begonia, Frankenstein, Die My Love, and J. Kelly. But before we get into the films, we have a couple of news items, I think, to go through since we haven't really caught up about how the award season is going for a few weeks. So first we have the Gotham nominations, which were announced a few weeks ago. The ceremony will be held on December 1st. And this year, one battle after another dominated with 6 nominations. This was actually a record. And they lifted the budget cap a few years ago, so that's why one battle after another is even eligible here. But if I had legs, I'd kick you. Had 4 nominations. It was just an accident, and No Other Choice had 3 nominations. And I think we had a few exciting call-outs overall. I mean, the Gotham Awards are sort of like if the Golden Globes were held in New York. They're somewhat, I think, of just a kickoff party, really, for the rest of the season. These awards are decided by a small jury of about 5 people, so not a lot to read into there. And in addition to the awards, there are a number of tributes that are handed out. And this year, it's funny, I think, because some of the tributes, they aren't really at all what I would imagine the Gotham Awards going for. It's not like they're spotlighting smaller films. Instead, they're actually films that I feel like film critics, which make up the nominations jury, wouldn't really touch. So we have a cultural icon tribute for Jeremy Allen White and Scott Cooper for Springsteen, Deliver Me From Nowhere, a director tribute for Noah Baumbach for J. Kelly, an ensemble tribute for Sinners, a musical tribute, which this is the first time they've done this, for Hugh Jackman and Kate Hudson for Song Sung Blue, a spotlight tribute for Tessa Thompson for Hedda, love that, a Vanguard tribute for Frankenstein for Guillermo del Toro, Oscar Isaac, and Jacob Elordi, and a visionary tribute for After the Hunt for Luca Guadagnino and Julia Roberts. How do you feel about this season so far and just where we're going? I know we talked a little bit about that on our Oscar predictions episode, but yeah, how are you feeling at this point?
We'll get into some of that as we talk about our movies today. And yeah, I feel similarly about this list of tributes, at least, that it's sort of a collection of New Yorkers, including After the Hunt, that was the opening film for NYFF. Again, question mark. It's sort of a collection of some possible awards contenders, but probably not likely. It seems more like a hodgepodge of titles that voters would seem to like. And it's not really a collection that I would, like you said, attribute to the Gotham Awards. Some of them, sure. And some of their nominations, absolutely. But I also think from having so many tributes, I feel like they're just trying to pack in so much. Mm-hmm. Not that anyone is belittled. I don't want to say that. But do we need all of them?
No.
Are they an award ceremony? I'm a little confused.
It's just to get talent in the room, I think. Like, not to view this completely cynically, but like, mm-hmm. Song Sung Blue is a movie that's going to have a very poor Metacritic score. It just is. I have seen it, and it's not deserving of a tribute. Springsteen, Deliver Me From Nowhere, also, the reviews around that have been really declining since the release of that movie. And this is the same award that they gave Timothée Chalamet and James Mangold last year for A Complete Unknown. And that movie actually performed much better with the critics. So I don't know. I'm excited just to hopefully attend again. It's a really fun ceremony to go to, but it's not one that we take seriously as a precursor. I think just because of the nature of the voting and how we talk about these awards in the rest of the season. But did you have some favorite nominations from the list?
I did, and that includes some of the tribute winners. Again, maybe it's like this needs to be another body of people giving the tributes, and then we have the awards, which are separate. But I did really like from their feature category that we had some smaller independent films. Sorry Baby, I watched recently. I know you mentioned this way earlier in the year. I very much love this movie. It's so endearing. I need to rewatch it again. I also really liked Lurker. I saw that in theaters. I think that's more of a fun inclusion in this list. And Train Dreams, which I think should be a big awards contender. It's a quieter film, so we'll see if that happens. I really hope so. But again, for the Gotham Awards, I think these titles are perfect feature nominees. And then we had some other mentions. Resurrection, again, I don't necessarily expect that to show up at the Oscars. I would love it if it did, but this was an international feature. And then I think just spotlighting some of the actors nominated in their non-gendered categories that I would like to see at the Oscars: Rose Byrne, Jennifer Lawrence, and Tessa Thompson, and Wunmi Mosaku for supporting. Some of these are inspired, and I hope other bodies take note. What about you? Did you have any fun nominations that showed up?
I mean, I love all of the One Battle nominations, of course. I just want this to steamroll all season. I'll just be honest about that. And I think Chase Infinity should win every Breakthrough Performer award this year. So I was happy to see her there. Also, Tiana Taylor in supporting. I love that performance. And Benicio del Toro also there. I'd love for them both to appear at the Oscars as well. And I think they will. Josh O'Connor in the lead performer category for The Mastermind. I think this is his best work this year. He's also in Rebuilding and Wake Up Dead Man, but I just love his hangdog look and approach to this. It's very Elliot Gould. So very happy to see him here. And then I'll echo you with Tessa Thompson. This is just a film that I wish got the early award season attention that After the Hunt did, because I think it's such an incredible adaptation of the Ibsen play and so different. And it's a shame that it just went to Prime and didn't really have a proper theatrical run. But I hope that people check it out because it is really inspired.
Yeah, I agree with that. I can't wait to rewatch. And a few more mentions here. So the SAG Awards had a little name change to the Actor Awards by SAG-AFTRA. Not sure what to make of this or if this was necessary. I don't know if this is some kind of signal for a shift in the industry within the guilds. And then a few more awards to note. So you mentioned the Gotham Awards being on December 1st. And then we have a whole bunch of other nominations announced early December, including regional prizes and the New York Films Critics Circle winners, the Los Angeles Film Critics Association winners. And then from there, we'll have more nominations from the Golden Globes, and we will definitely update all of you on those dates when we get closer.
Yeah, the first week of December is jam-packed, really, from the 1st through the 8th. We have, like you said, everything from the Gothams to the New York Film Critics Circle to NBR, Indie Spirit nominations, Critics' Choice nominations, LA. And then on the 8th, we have the Golden Globe nominations and Oscar shortlist voting begins. So it's really, you know, from here on out, it's one battle after another. So now we'll get into, I think, our fall review roundup. We'll start with Begonia. Description here: two conspiracy-obsessed young men kidnap the high-powered CEO of a major company, convinced that she is an alien intent on destroying planet Earth. This was directed by Yorgos Lanthimos and stars Jesse Plemons and Emma Stone. It was adapted by Will Tracy. He also wrote The Menu and a few episodes of Succession. So far this season, this has an HMMA nomination for original score for Jerskin Fendrix. He was also nominated at the Oscars for Poor Things and a Gotham Award nomination for Best Feature. It's also worth pointing out that this is a remake of the Korean film Save the Green Planet. I saw this back at Telluride and told you that I was less than enthusiastic about this film. I am not really a Lanthimos person, but what do you think? Because I think you've been up and down really with him over the years a bit too.
I thought you had seen this at Cannes, but I walked out so enraged. I was just like mad at everybody on the sidewalk, just like people being around. I was like, get out of my way. I need to go home. It was such a bizarre feeling. But yeah, I think with time passing, I have been less and less into Lanthimos' films. This one, I probably wouldn't say as little as Kinds of Kindness, but I feel like I had a more visceral reaction to this, just being upset after the movie. I get what he's doing. I honestly don't think he's saying anything new with this story. I am intrigued for sure to see the original Korean film and how that adaptation worked, what they changed, or what that initial one was saying. Despite the ending, I just felt at a distance the entire time when I was watching. And I think there's a little bit of like a disdain for the characters and what they're doing and how absurd the situation is. But then I think after the movie finished, I was like, okay, I didn't want to see this going in. And now I'm upset that I have sat through this movie. And now we're talking about it. So I'm curious about the praise for the film and how people are really into it. I do need to read more reviews and see some of that. But I needed a minute to also like pause and not think about it afterwards. How do you feel about it? Or if you also want to talk about if you think it has more potential beyond the Gotham Awards, like we mentioned before.
Yeah, so it had really positive reviews out of Venice. So I was thinking, you know, maybe I will like this. Maybe. I liked The Favorite. I don't care for Poor Things or Kinds of Kindness. And a lot of Lanthimos's older films, I've just never clicked with them. The Lobster, Killing of a Sacred Deer, a filmmaker who is just not really, we've never really gelled, I will say. And with Begonia, when I saw this there, I was angry during the viewing and I left thinking, I am absolutely confounded by the praise for this. I just didn't understand it. And after several films now, I really want to talk to Lanthimos and ask him why he's so intent on torturing women in his films. Because now it's a pattern in Save the Green Planet. A man and a woman kidnap a man. And now you're switching that to two men kidnapping a woman and torturing her. And that's the 2 hours. You're watching this Emma Stone character who is, I think, you know, when we think about the themes of the film, it's dealing with big pharma and women in power positions. There are a lot of interesting themes that are there. Conspiracy theorists, the environment, but they're all done so on a surface level, very heavy-handed. It's a very abrasive film that I think says everything it needs to say in the first 5 minutes. And you can see the ending coming from a mile away. And when the ending does come about, there's a major unforced error made by Tracy and Lanthimos, which I think I don't want to get into it because I think it will spoil the film for people who haven't seen it, but it almost justifies the torture and the treatment. And I don't think that that makes any sense when you think about what this film is also. I just don't really think it has anything to say. For me, the ending felt like a Rick and Morty episode, and I just don't understand it. I'm going hard on this one. It's just one thing after another with him where I think the politics of the film are really thin. So are the characters. I also think what they do to the autistic character in the film is absolutely ridiculous. This movie just made me mad. It really just did.
Exactly. Yeah. That's how I felt. I think a rewatch would honestly hurt this movie. Like when you see what happens and you look back, it just makes you question a lot of things. And that's just the plot itself. But I think the motivations behind that are also questionable. I think safe to say this is a bomb for both of us in trying to think about this movie positively. And I think you said this at the time at Telluride, like Jesse Plemons and Emma Stone are doing great work. I think given the material, it's a bit maddening And I think I would also say the score by Fendrix kept me into the film because it was so weird. But I just felt detached from what I was watching most of the time.
Yeah, I think that Emma Stone and Jesse Plemons are both great in this movie. I just wish that the film was better, really, for them. Do you think this has any Oscar potential?
I mean, I was right about Kinds of Kindness. I think voters are going to act similarly with this and not want to touch it. Despite Emma Stone's success and Oscars and presence, and the same thing with this entire team that has collaborated together multiple times. I mean, could I see something like visual effects just showing up? Sure. Or costume design, maybe a tech or two, potentially score, but also Poor Things. Getting some of those nominations was just a much bigger film, and I haven't seen that praise yet, or at least the amount from the industry since its release. So I'm going to err on the side of saying no, but a very small possibility. What do you think?
Yeah, that's how I feel. I think we could see Emma Stone and Jesse Plemons getting in at the Golden Globes. Adapted screenplay, I think, is really up in the air, but also Focus is balancing a lot this season, and they have Hamnet, which is a much stronger contender, I think, than Begonia, which is very abrasive. And I mean, I know that doesn't necessarily steer the Academy away. They loved Poor Things, but this one just feels like it won't quite have the passion to get in, but we could see it in a couple of categories. If you had to give this movie one Oscar, what would it be?
Not this being After Dark.
I know, right?
I'm just going to go with score. I'm going to stick to my guns. I think Emma Stone is a possibility because I like how you see her motivations and her brain working as this high-powered individual, this CEO of this company, and how she tries to reason with these men. But I will just say the score because it adds this unexpected element to the film that definitely leans into Lanthimos's weird side, as does the ending. And I could see myself listening to it again at some point, or if it were to show up on the shortlist. If you had to give this movie one Oscar, what would that be?
I would go Best Actor for Jesse Plemons. I think he and Emma Stone really are the reason to watch this movie. And I think what he's doing is, it's really creepy, really detailed. He actually feels like a real person in this film, which I think is rare sometimes for Lanthimos movies. Sometimes his characters just feel like ideas or ciphers. And this character felt very real to me in a terrifying way. And I think that's because of Plemons here. So I would give it to him.
Okay, let's move on to Frankenstein. Description here: Dr. Victor Frankenstein, a brilliant but egotistical scientist, brings a creature to life in a monstrous experiment that ultimately leads to the undoing of both the creator and his tragic creation. This is directed and written by Guillermo del Toro, adapted by the Mary Shelley novel, obviously. It stars Oscar Isaac, Jacob Elordi, Christoph Waltz, Mia Goth, and more. Awards so far for this film: it won the People's Choice Award runner-up at the Toronto International Film Festival. It also has an HMMA nomination for original score for Alexander Desplat. And we did see a Gotham Award nomination for supporting performance for Elordi. So I think this was a big contender. We had talked about it on our early Oscar predictions and the 2025 preview. And I think it's as big as I expected a movie to be from Del Toro or Netflix or an adaptation of this work that we've seen many of. What did you think of this version of Frankenstein?
The first time I saw it, I would say that the viewing conditions were not optimal. It was really late at night after a full day of festival going, and that made this feel really slow and kind of like a slog. But I revisited it, and I really liked it on rewatch. I think seeing it through fresh eyes, not after four other movies in that day, really helped me appreciate everything that Del Toro was doing with the screenplay, which, of course, you know, there are many adaptations of Frankenstein and the Frankenstein's monster character. But this one, I feel like, really does honor the source material and really does so in a cool way. I think that the structure of tackling this film in two parts can make the pacing feel a bit off to me. I'm far more interested in the second part of the film, which is not about Victor Frankenstein, but about the monster. I really enjoy that section because I think that's when Jacob Elordi's performance really comes to life. I think that all of the raves about this performance are completely earned. It is, I think, such a cool character for him to play, and he has a really great arc. It's a really challenging physical performance as well. And Guillermo del Toro is someone who I really admire, and I love listening to him talk about movies. But sometimes his films, I like to just look at more than I feel like I can fully emotionally connect with. So that was something here where I definitely am not as high on it as everyone else, but I really like the costumes, the production design. I think it is really beautiful to look at. And he, I think, does some really unique things in looking at what this story really is all about and the power dynamics and this idea of creation and of beauty and violence and terror. Those are all really interesting things that I think he gets at in a really smart way.
I also liked it when I first saw it in Toronto. I think it's a great atmospheric gothic film, and that's definitely a setting we know Del Toro loves, and that it wasn't so black and white. We saw this slow transformation of Dr. Frankenstein, and it wasn't this like comic evil that we see in Young Frankenstein, or I think something more sinister or simple in the original Universal film. But I was really drawn to Elordi and his performance. The structure of the film, parts of it worked for me, parts of it didn't. It kind of hops around. So you have this overarching plot that isn't just the creation of the monster. But I did find myself remembering events from Young Frankenstein of like, oh, this all happened in that movie. And I hadn't realized it because I had also seen, again, Frankenstein and The Bride of Frankenstein before this. I think during the summer I had watched them. So it was just funny how all of those movies kind of melded together in my brain, giving literal and symbolic life to the monster, I think, was what I enjoyed most. Elordi's performance, I think he's finally been given something to shine in, except just being like a tall, masculine, yet soft person.
He is still hot, though.
I'll keep that coming to you. I might have to rewatch to see if it's a smash or pass for his monster character. But also, I mean, that reminds me of, and I think we mentioned last week, but how he would sit in the makeup chair for like 11 hours a day. I mean, like, that's a day in itself, and then you have to act. So there was a lot that went into this, and I think the award season will be interesting to see if he does show up elsewhere besides the Gothams. I think that's unexpected for them in a way. So I think there is more potential for him to keep showing up. And I think with Oscar Isaac, I enjoyed that part of the story and how scientific it was. It felt really rooted in a possible reality. And I don't know, that I could latch on to as a doctor, and seeing him kind of go insane by his own doing and the effects that that had on him and the story and the setting and how the end comes about. But I think overall, I was surprised, and I think there are a lot of mixed reviews for this movie, but I think for one that's on Netflix, I honestly recommend it to most people to watch. So definitely, I would say Oscar potential, but do you have any specifics or ones that you really have hope for going forward?
I think that what's interesting about this movie is that it's just been climbing and climbing and climbing, because when it premiered at Venice and even at Telluride, it did not do very well. The reviews were middling. People thought it was really slow. There wasn't much to it. And then at TIFF, it did so well. And now it's been selling out screenings during its theatrical run, and then also has been the number one movie on Netflix and has been doing very well there. So I feel like there's a lot of passion for this movie. So it is, I think, rising, and I think we're going to see it in a number of categories. I think you can't count out Del Toro in the director conversation even, but I think it's strongest definitely in its craft categories. Things like makeup and hairstyling, costume design, production design, those things that I think we thought it would be strong in regardless of whether or not people liked the movie, I think now are only strengthened by this strong audience reception. And I would consider it a front runner in all of those technical categories.
I agree. And I kind of see it as Dune Part One, in that it could win a lot of those tech categories, makeup and hairstyling, production design, costume design. And I think along with that, it brings the possibility for cinematography. And you mentioning Del Toro puts it in the screenplay conversation. And I think picture is likely. So again, it's just a combination that amounts to quite a few nominations. So we can't count it out from anything, I would say. I will be curious to see what Netflix does. It feels like they're kind of throwing so many movies out there. Not to see what sticks, but with Frankenstein's recent release, and we'll talk about another film, and there are some other films that also were just released this week and this month. So we've seen those at festivals in the fall, but these will now be streaming, and we're looking for a response from a different audience. So I don't know how those essentially will play with those voters. So if you could give this movie one Oscar, what would it be?
I would give this costume design for Kate Holly. I know it's probably surprising I didn't pick Jacob Elordi. I probably should have, but I think that the costumes are really stunning. There is a look at the beginning of the film that Mia Goth's character, her first character in the movie, wears that is this beautiful red veil and train to it that I love. And the costumes, I think, are just so ornate. There are also so many of them. There is everything from just like everyday period wear to ornate gowns to military uniforms. There's a lot of volume there and a lot of great references to paintings from different periods in history. So I would say costume design. What about you?
I think I was going to say costume design, but whether you had said Elordi or not, I probably would have just said the other. So I'm going to say Jacob Elordi. I'm happy that he's had this great experience and he's gotten to talk about his role throughout all of the junkets, and that hopefully it will catapult him.
All right. Next up, we have Die My Love. Description here, Grace and her partner Jackson move into an old country house. She pursues her dream of writing and the couple welcome a baby soon after. However, with Jackson frequently absent and the pressures of domestic life weighing on her, Grace begins to unravel, leaving a path of destruction in her wake. This was directed by Lynn Ramsey and stars Jennifer Lawrence, Robert Pattinson, Sissy Spacek, and Lakeith Stanfield. I saw this a long time ago now, back at Cannes, and the audience response has been not great, D cinema score, but I think that people who love it really love it. And I think there's a lot to say about it. So what did you think of Die My Love?
I'm one of those that really liked this movie. I think a lot of that has to do with Jennifer Lawrence. I don't think there's anyone else that could have done it like her. And the filmmaking by Ramsey is also an essential quality to this story that really centers her experience and how she's feeling postpartum, because you're kind of thrust into this movie when it begins. And if you aren't on the movie's wavelength, I think it could be difficult to grasp or slowly enter this world. I think it's one that grabs you and keeps you in it. And if you're not there, like, I understand that this is a divisive movie. I really want to read the short story. I read the first page. I got a digital edition from the library. And even in those first few lines, you're put inside her mind of her carrying this knife and not really knowing what she's doing, but having this instinct. And then she puts it down and she's in front of her baby. And all of that happens so quickly. The setting is essential. The relationship between her character and Pattinson's character, believing in their marriage and their relationship, I think it can be difficult to do. And they do some very bizarre things in this movie of becoming animals or reverting to their naturalistic desires that can be really dark and intense themes to talk about. And then you add on the layer of the family and their relationships with their parents that it's a lot to handle. And again, I really liked it. I think a second viewing would definitely help. But I also left overwhelmed and felt similarly to how I felt after If I Had Legs, I'd Kick You and the performance that Rose Byrne gave. It may not be for everyone, but I'm glad that it's in the conversation and that we're talking about it. How did you feel about it? Or how did you feel way back when you saw this at Cannes? And have you rewatched it? Did your feelings change over time?
Yeah, this was one of my favorites from Cannes, I think, just because of the experience of watching it. And so much of that, I think, is the partnership really between Ramsey and Lawrence in particular. I think that they are a really great match, actually, as a filmmaker and an actor, because what's so interesting about Jennifer Lawrence's performance here is that if you were to watch this film and it was somebody else, let's say. I don't have anyone in mind, but this movie could be very boring because a lot of it, you are just watching her around the house. Like, you're just watching her sit with this baby, have this dog bark at her, watching her take a walk with the baby. So if you're thinking of some of the actions in the film, it doesn't sound that engaging, but somehow she makes it feel so alive, and she gives it that quality that makes you feel like you are inside her head, which is, I did read the book. It's like a novella. It's really small. Mm-hmm. I read the book before I saw the movie because I was really anticipating it, and I just kind of wanted to see what the style of language was like. And to really be in her head, that is hard to translate to the screen, but I think she does such a fantastic job of bringing that to life. And I think it is difficult to watch her in some of these scenarios, but they never feel over the top, which I think is also a challenge. Like, this is a woman who is tearing apart her bathroom, the tile, everything, the mirror, who is running into glass. Like, she's doing things like this, but they never feel like they wouldn't be real for that character. And I think that's such a big challenge. I think Pattinson is also very good. Amazing to see Sissy Spacek back. I think that she has just a presence that's so singular. And when I see her, I just think I could watch 3 more hours of anything with Sissy Spacek in it. But there's this great moment where she's holding a rifle and starts cackling. It's amazing. That is one of those times in the movie where I felt like, oh, I feel alive watching this. And that's an important thing, I think, when you're watching so many movies. And especially in a festival setting or even just going to the theater to see it, I think you want to see actors giving it their all. And I think it's very avant-garde and different. And I think some audiences might bristle at that. Specifically, I mean, if you look at the cinema score, but also I just think it's such a cool project. And it's really just an exploration of how women can feel in one of the most emotionally vulnerable times in your life. So I'm a fan. I like it a lot.
And then in terms of its awards, so Lawrence, like I mentioned earlier, was nominated for a Gotham, and it did receive 8 nominations at the British Independent Film Awards. Do you see there being potential at the Oscars or other ceremonies?
I think the movie's potential is really just with Jennifer Lawrence. I would love for her to get an Oscar nomination for this. I think she completely deserves it. This is a go for broke great performance. And I hope she's there. I would love for Sissy Spacek to be nominated too, especially with how supporting actress is looking. But that seems highly unlikely. I don't know. I think it's hard because anytime you have those cases where it's a performance or bust, it can go many different directions. She is a former winner, which helps. She's great at campaigning. I think her press tour has been so much fun, especially with Robert Pattinson. Their lie detector test was hilarious. Yeah. I could watch that 20 times. So I don't know. I think the movie is challenging, and I think this character is also challenging for voters. So I'm rooting for her. But for me right now, she's in my like 6 to 10 spot in predictions.
Yeah, I feel similarly about all of that. I would love to see her get in, but I think because the film can be difficult, it's kind of a year of experimental filmmaking and performances, which I love, but I think that makes it difficult for movies like this to show up at the Oscars or performances, even from Jennifer Lawrence. We can look back to her nominations and that you feel that similar raw energy that she's giving here. But I don't know if those films are going to be as loved by voters. So I would err on the side of saying no, unfortunately. But in my heart, she is a winner. She's a nominee. I would absolutely give my one Oscar to her. Hands down, I was so cued into every little expression and shift that you would see in her face or her eyes or just switching to boredom, switching to anger or sadness or fire. She's just an electric actress, and I loved watching every minute of her. What would your Oscar be?
She would be my Oscar winner too, I think pretty easily. She's just so fun to watch here because you just never know what she's going to do next. I think that is the most exciting part of her performance for me here. And there's this great quote that Emma Stone said actually about Jennifer Lawrence in the New Yorker profile on her, where she says, "She just becomes it. If an actor is on stage with a cat, who are you going to watch? The audience would watch the cat because it's going to respond genuinely in the moment while the actors are still acting. It's that quality. Jen's the cat. She just becomes it, like a child actor. The circumstance around you is real. Be in it. That's what everybody wishes they could do."
Love that. So our last film we'll talk about today is J. Kelly. Description here: famous movie actor J. Kelly embarks on a journey of self-discovery, confronting both his past and present, accompanied by his devoted manager, Ron. This is directed by Noah Baumbach and stars George Clooney, Adam Sandler, Laura Dern, Billy Crudup, and more. We both saw this at the New York Film Festival. I know you've been saying that this is a movie for the Academy, by the Academy, and I would agree that this is one they could easily love. What other thoughts do you have about this movie?
Yeah, so this is actually one for me that's also improved on rewatch. I really liked it the first time I saw it, but I think in watching it again, there was something that really appealed to me emotionally. There's a quote in the film about movies being pieces of time. And Noah Baumbach got that idea from Peter Bogdanovich, who heard that quote from Jimmy Stewart, which I love as just a little bit of trivia that I learned at a Q&A. But I think this idea of people in the industry, specifically movie stars, really the way that they view their films really isn't just as the work of art as we see it, but as connected to a piece of time in their life. The friends that they made on that picture, the experience that they had outside of making that film, what was going on in their life at that time? Was that when they got married or had a kid or moved? Like, what big life changes were happening during that period? I think that's a really interesting idea. And I think the way that Clooney's character of J. Kelly, he looks back on his past through these different vignettes. And I think that the way that they're constructed in the film, it's really beautiful. Lena Sandgren's cinematography, I think, is really great. And in those moments, we really start to see the J. Kelly persona that he puts on it really starts to crack. And I think we start to see the person inside. And so many characters, I think, in the film really, they make comments about him, you know, not being human, or is there really a person in there? And I think in these moments, we really see that. We see regret and sadness. And I really like stories like that about aging stars, considering their past and also their future in and out of the industry. I think that there are things that Baumbach does as a filmmaker that, you know, he's referencing some other films that I think are more successful, but I still was really moved by the end.
I also really like the ending. I think this movie as a whole is a great crowd pleaser. Jokingly, I say this could do very well at the AARP Awards, but I think this is also a movie that anyone can watch and get something from. Yes, it's about an old movie star that we know to be George Clooney, and his journey, I think, shows us some of the ins and outs of being an actor that highlight some of the difficulties or experiences actors have in their films and off screen. But I love how the film opens on this long one-er of Jay shooting his final scene for this film. And then the film kind of pivots to the relationship he has with his daughter, trying to live out their potential last extended time together before she goes off to school. And then kind of getting this part slapstick comedy, part drama of him and his team, which includes Adam Sandler and Laura Dern, amidst him looking back on many of the experiences he's had during his life, including one that I think is the best scene in the movie, which is with Billy Crudup, an old friend that he went to an audition with when they were young, and the casting team ended up going with Jay Kelly. So that brought along a lot of resentment. And now that the actors are older and rehashing this, I think just what Billy Crudup can do should earn him a supporting actor nomination. You see this scene, and what actually did happen in my screening was everyone clapped. Like, that is how intense you feel his emotions and just how good he is. And I think that's some of the love that people have for the morning show. And he really does shine in that moment. We don't see much of him later on, but I think even though the movie runs a bit long on these vignettes that we are seeing Jay Kelly go through, I think the end does bring you back in pretty hard and hits you. I think I cried during that final montage. So the heartwarming quality that you leave this movie with, I think, sticks with you for a while.
I completely agree with you on the Billy Crudup performance. It's a short moment in the film, right? Just that one scene. But I had the same experience at my screening where people clapped. It had mid-movie applause, which anytime that happens, I think you do kind of just you have to clock it. What do you think about this movie's Oscar potential?
I think because of the filmmaking team we have here, we have a lot of Oscar winners, nominees, veterans of the industry that we have wanted to see get their due. So I think for that reason alone, you can't count it out. It's another one that we've been talking about most of the year. I think it's fallen a little bit from all of those other conversations we've had. And I would say most of the nominations that we could see are very borderline actual nominees. Like, I'm not expecting Noah Baumbach to get in, but could we see some last minute swell from the DGA and then he makes it in, or at the Golden Globes? Like, little things could alert us to this movie overperforming at the Oscars. And that goes from picture director, actor, supporting actor, screenplay. I would say fewer texts than other films we've talked about today. But again, I think it's possible it's more on the back burner until we hear about more from the industry. How do you feel about its chances?
I completely agree. I think early in the season, I thought this was Netflix's biggest contender, but it seems like Frankenstein has taken that spot. I still think this could do really well with the industry just because of how people could relate to this and just how well made it is. And I agree. I think we could see some signs of that possibly in original screenplay for Noah Baumbach and Emily Mortimer. Adam Sandler is also getting a number of tributes. I don't know how I feel about him getting in. He's right now like 5 or 6. It changes every day. I think it's funny because for me, the last spot will come down to Jacob Elordi and Adam Sandler. So that's a crazy thing. I don't know. But I think the industry could respond really well to it. It's just one of those wait and see cases for me. And if you could give this movie one Oscar, what would it be?
I would give this movie screenplay. When I saw those titles after the movie and Emily Mortimer's name on screen, I kind of lit up. I was shocked, but in a way that made me want to see more from her. And I think a lot of that is why I was emotional, or you laugh during the movie, you get so into the relationships that J. Kelly has and struggles with throughout his life and his journey as he follows his daughter. So I would give it screenplay, and I would say that it has its best chance and will most likely show up in the screenplay category even more so than anything else we've mentioned today. What would your Oscar be?
I would actually give it best original score for Nicholas Britell. I love the score here. It has this sweeping, nostalgic feel that reminded me of old Hollywood, yet also feels really bright and contemporary at the same time. I love Britell's work, and I hope that he can squeeze into the category come Oscar time. And that was a little award season release roundup. We will be back soon, I think, with more awards chatter, but we have an exciting episode next time. Next time on Oscar Wild, we will have our annual Drama Wild collaboration. So we'll be collaborating with our friends at the Drama Podcast, Connor and Dylan McDowell. We'll be talking about a new release, Wicked for Good. So we talked about Wicked with them last year, and we'll be talking all about part 2 next time.
I can just remember back 2 years ago when John M. Chu wrote that letter about its staggered release and how we would be having multiple pods with them. And here we are. It's almost time. I'm excited to have them on and just chat as we normally do about everything and just to hear what they think about the sequel. It's so weird to call it a sequel. Act 2 of this movie. So tune in for that. Thank you all for listening. Feel free to rate, review, and follow us on Instagram, Twitter, Blue Sky, and TikTok at Oscar Wild Pod. Check out our bonus content on our Patreon at patreon.com/OscarWild and updated nomination predictions at oscarwild.squarespace.com.
Thanks, everyone. We'll see you next time.